This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey! Wait up! Sergey!
Carl, why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running.
Yeah, but what are you running from? The cops.
No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going to need a better alibi than that, bro. I'll get your passport, and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. That's what I hear when I make another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform that allows you to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. So sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase, and take your business to the next level today.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, amazing home run applesauces, minor league podcast.
Nice save.
I'm Steve Saiva, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Blahos and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Pretty good, yep. Better than all the executives at the winter meetings, apparently.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's a... flu going around or whatever.
A norovirus. Was it norovirus? Whatever the stomach bug was.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Mark Carrick had a great tweet, in play runs, which was just 10-10. Very well. Mark continues to be quite good. I wish he was still on the Mets beat.
Well, better that, I guess, than like mono or something going around.
I don't know. Like, having a stomach bug at home is bad enough, but having a stomach bug when you're on the road and, you know, like, have to get on a plane.
Nah, I would be crying.
Like, I'm going to sit in a car for a while and then sit in security and then be on a plane and then presumably sit in another car or a train to get home after that. And the whole time I'm just trying to shit my brains out. Like, that sounds...
I guess that's why the free agent market is pretty slow right now.
Uh-huh.
All right. Keep trade cut. Places you want to have a stomach bug in.
as someone with chronic stomach problems, I feel particularly well qualified to comment on this particular topic.
Yeah, stomach problems anywhere outside of home sucks. And then, of course, I still suck at home.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, like, all you want to do is get home, like, immediately.
Yep.
Like, all you want to do is get home immediately, and you're just not even close. It's not even like you could walk, like you were saying, Lucas. Like,
Where are the winter meetings this year? I haven't been paying that much attention, because nothing's been happening.
I don't remember where they are.
I think Arizona. I don't know. West Coast somewhere.
I always think it's Arizona, but, you know.
They were in San Diego recently. I don't know if they still are.
Sounds about right. I mean, I will not hold it against any of them for not doing... Usually we could be like bitching and moaning about teams not wanting to spend money, which is probably true and, you know, a conversation we'll have at some point this offseason, but they're in the clear for now.
Yeah. Unless everyone goes in just the stall next to each other and you can discuss business.
Oh, God. Collusion on a scale.
Little unconventional.
Oh, God.
All right, well, I'm not really sure how I could segue from that to this, so I'm not going to try, but promote, extend, trade. And today is Asdrubal Cabrera's birthday. He is 38, which makes me feel, I don't know, old, because we think of him as like over the hill, and he's turning 38, and that's not very old. But he had a solid career at the Mets, a 803 OPS and a 117 OPS plus over 2.5 years. Obviously, like, the marquee moment that he had was that home run, that walk-off home run against the Phillies in September 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So what other marquee Mets home runs are we going to promote, extend, or trade here? Obviously, Mike Piazza's 9/11 home run, We have Robin Ventura's Grand Slam single, which for intents of this exercise, I'm going to count as a home run.
We're counting that? Okay, yeah. Okay.
And then we have Todd Pratt's Walk Off 1999 NLDS clincher.
So is it weird to say that none of these are particularly impactful for me because I was not a fan at any point?
That's fair. You were young. You became, I'm not young, but you became a fan after all of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the 9/11 home run is huge culturally, and that's probably my choice here for extending. But yeah, the Todd Pratt and the Robin Ventura home runs, like, I obviously am aware of them and appreciate their significance to Mets history, but neither holds any sort of emotional, significant emotional connection, honestly.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I remember the Piazza one the most. Like, even though I was young at the time, obviously I was like 7 or 6, but like, I remember that. Like, I remember watching that. You know,
mm-hmm.
And also these are weird because they're not like you could have different, you could have different emotional connections to different home runs for different reasons. Like, the Todd Pratt home run is like objectively cool. I don't think about that in Mets history often.
Right.
Like, I rarely think about that moment. Like, I think about the Piazza home run to cap off the big comeback against the Braves around that time. It was like the 8-run inning or whatever, because I was that's the first baseball game I remember being at. And I was there and I was like, oh, this is cool. You know what I mean? I'm like a 6-year-old, like, I've kind of not understanding why everyone's freaking out. But I remember that day, like, I was sitting behind some dude and I kept kicking his chair and he got mad at my dad and yelled at him. And my dad was like, dude, he's like 6. Leave him alone. And like, it was like, that was like earlier that game when the Mets were getting blown out and everyone was mad. like I remember that game, and that's a nothing home run in the grand scheme, but emotionally that one is like I have a connection to that particular moment. So nothing really happened where the Mets like didn't win the World Series out of any of these, or it's not like there's no Joe Carter, obviously, where he hit the home run to walk off the World Series. That happened like twice ever, but there's just not really like a David Freeze moment doesn't exist for the Mets because they never went on to win the thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the Todd Pratt home run is kind of like, that's cool. And there's a Benny Agmaiani one, right? In the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, part of what I guess it sucks for Todd Pratt's walk off is that there was like a Benny Agmaiani. There was an Edgardo Alfonso, Mike Piazza. Like,
I think the Fonzie one, Ventura, that was against, like, Arizona, right? Arizona. Like, I think of that home run too, because that's like an
okay game. Yes.
It was a grand slam or something in Arizona. Like, I remember that game too. And like, I just, for some reason, I don't remember the Todd Pratt home run like that. Like, I just don't.
I mean, it's a shame. Obviously, it's a shame they didn't win in 2015, but there'd be a number of choices there. You've got David Wright.
The Conforto double home run game.
Yeah.
One of the best individual Mets performances. It still is. And I barely remember it half the time.
Yeah, that was also another problem, is when I was like looking up like important home runs, it's literally clustered in, you know, this very small time frame, the late 90s and early 2000 Mets, because you didn't really have much before and after. I mean, you could say, you know, some 1986 playoff home runs, you know, Lenny Dykstra or Darryl Strawberry's or Ray Knight's, but like,
but you think other stuff singles happened in and those doubles games. In 86, like, you don't think,
right? Yeah, yeah,
they didn't have a walk-off home run like that,
right?
I guess exactly. David Wright's home run in the World Series is like, one of the best franchise players of all time. Getting his World Series moment at Citi Field is maybe up there too,
right? That should have been But I feel like the significance of that is kind of diminished because it's like, well, they lost. So it's like,
yeah. And that's the tough part, because you could say that about none of us have seen them win. So you could say that about every moment that's happened for the Mets.
I was like 11 days old. I mean, I existed. So
that's fair.
I don't think I remember. Maybe I should go into some like hypnotherapy, unlock some deep, deep core memories.
Mm-hmm. I hate to admit it, but I'm sitting here thinking about it, the home run that actually sticks in my head most in Mets history is a negative one. And you should be able to guess which one that is, I think, but it's Yadier Molina's homer in the 2006 NLCS.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, that's a traumatic memory, so it's understandable.
I mean, that was like the, and I was late to, it's not that I didn't watch baseball, I just didn't have, like, it never clicked for me before the 2006 season, and like my first serious baseball memory is losing my shit running around the house after Andy Chavez's catch, and then they go on to lose the game.
What a tumultuous, like, half an hour, whatever.
That was. I mean, very good introduction to being a Met fan. Give you some really high, and then just yank the rug out immediately. Be like, just kidding. It's actually this.
Yeah.
So.
Those are the Mets. Those are the Mets.
So I think it's the Piazza one, just because that transcends sports. Like at that moment, it was just, that's like a cultural, like Lucas said, that's like a New York City culture thing. I don't think anyone would not think of that when you think of famous. That's going to go down as one of the all-time most famous Mets moments ever.
Right. That's like one of the things that they have in like Cooperstown, just as like a recurring video or something like that, you know?
Certainly. Yes.
I'm torn with Robin Ventura and Todd Pratt because it's like Todd Pratt's walk-off home run, it meant something. You know, they clinched the NLDS, they were going to the NLCS. Whereas Robin Ventura's thing, it's like just such a weird oddity.
Yeah, I think that's like, what it is with Ventura. Like,
if it was an actual Grand Slam, it probably wouldn't be remembered as fondly.
But this is hilarious because it's like he never actually scored and it didn't matter. So.
So I would have been so pissed if I was him, honestly.
Like, he got robbed.
You took away my fucking homer, you morons. Let me round the bases. What are we doing?
Typical Mets. All right. Moving on now. The AFL season is over. 5 weeks, 30 games. And the Glendale Desert Dogs ended the 2023 Arizona Fall League season with a 12-18 record. At no point in the season were any of the Mets players anywhere close to anything that could be considered good.
Everyone you award them no points.
Yeah, everyone who paid attention is worse for having followed for 5 weeks. Anyone who subjected themselves to watching it, we get no points. Certainly, may God have mercy on our souls.
Yeah, they should trade Kevin Parada to the first team that's willing to take him this offseason.
Yeah, so Kevin Parada obviously is the main guy we were all interested in. He definitely had a few weeks to forget. He hit 186, 240, 371, which is a 611 OPS, and he had a lovely 4 walks to 29 strikeouts in 18 games, which is... great.
That's how you say bad.
Yeah. Of all the hitters that the Mets sent, Parada, JT Schwartz, Rowdy Jordan, and DeAndre Smith. Rowdy Jordan, he led the bunch with a 255, 367, 373 batting line, which is a barely passable 740 OPS.
Fuck.
Yeah.
The best slugging percentage we have is below 400 in the Arizona Fall League. That's
it's not what you want. I don't think when you send people there, you're like, that's what I want to see.
No,
it's like golf.
But I do think that we need to be a little less doomsday-ish than Lucas, at least just based on this singular block of, you know, 30 games or whatever, you know, he actually played, because there are some reasons to hand wave away his performance. You know, at the end of July, he did have an injury. And then when he did come back in the regular season for like 20 games or so, he still didn't really look right. And then the AFL season started right after. So take that into account for however much you want to give it, you know, however much you want to weigh that. You could also say that, you know, he played 105 games this year plus the AFL season, which is more than he's ever played before. Jude is probably tired.
I just don't care enough either way about the AFL. Like, it's right, gonna sound, I know what it sounds like, but I just don't care. Like, I would like to see him do better.
Yeah.
I don't really care. That I'm gonna forget that he was bad in the AFL in like a week.
Exactly.
Because I guess by the winter meetings when stuff is actually happening. So maybe like 3 weeks. But it's just okay. Can you name who was at the AFL last year? Do any of us remember?
Mike Vassell, I think.
Was he good?
No.
Well, he's good now.
Who's exceptionally bad?
I just don't care. Like, I really, like, that's just really the long and short of it.
It's
fair.
Honestly, the biggest thing, I was watching a bunch of clips of Parada, and again, his swing is different. It's something they've been tinkering on. They've been tinkering with all season. They're throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks and what works. So I feel like it's just hard to get a gauge on Parada as a hitter, because it's like every 4 weeks something is different with him, which intrinsically I guess is not good. But, you know, he was a solid hitter at Georgia Tech, which is obviously a different environment than professional baseball, but it is in there somewhere, and at some point something could click, and then all of a sudden you have the guy that was widely considered as, you know, a top 15 whatever draft pick. You know what I mean?
I get that. It's weird that they're tinkering this much with it, and his hand setup is still this bad. Like, I don't know. Again, I think visual hit tool evaluation in a lot of situations is a trap, but when there's as clear a connection between his swing and his problems, I think maybe there's some merit to that, and it's odd to me that they haven't tried adjusting it more drastically amidst all these other changes. But
yeah, I don't know. He's what he's the latest thing that he's been doing. So you all know how he had that very odd bat angle where the bat head was literally angled like at the ground. So what he's doing now is his bat head is pointed upward, like in a more traditional manner. And then when he loads back, he sinks it down and then brings it back up again. Like, I don't know. It's a timing thing that he really likes, I guess. I mean, if I was the Mets minor league developmental staff, I'd be like, get rid of that immediately. But I don't know.
So, like,
easier said than done, I guess.
I don't think Lucas is necessarily wrong that the Mets should probably look to trade him. But I also don't think the his AFL performance should dictate that. I just think that it was a little worse of a prospect than we expected. So, and the Mets are, if you look at free agency, like if the Mets are actually going to try to put a competitive team on the field, which I know, Lucas, you've been in like our Slack channels and stuff kind of up and down on that. I just think they have too much money tied into the, if you have a Nimmo and a Lindor and Pete's not going to get traded because there's just not going to be, I don't think you're going to get the market for him that you want. Like, there's no choice. Like, they have to try. Like, you can't just waste a year of all of that. So if you trade Parada for a bat, because unless you sign like Teoscar Hernandez, there's just no outfielder. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a bad free agent market for hitters outside of Ohtani, really, that I don't really want that. The Mets have all this money, and there's no one. I look at everyone and I'm like, I don't really want you to spend all the money on the Matt Chapmans of the world or the Aaron Nolas of the world. So go, if you can't, don't sign Yamamoto because something happens. Go trade Parada for someone, because you should be able to find another one. And Alvarez is here for a long time. He looks good. So
yeah, I mean,
even if Parada ends up good, like, Alvarez is already here. So you could,
yeah,
you're dealing from an actual position of strength on the major league roster to build to get a good player on the major league roster. I don't think they'll get anything crazy for Parada, but still, you know, I think he's a guy that they could look to trade for that reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say that his future, he doesn't have a future here, because anything could happen. But given the strengths and weaknesses and everything of the Mets major league team, yeah, I don't really see a very clear path for Parada to slot in anywhere as things exist right now.
Yeah, like maybe he becomes an outfielder or something, but the way he's hit, like what type of prospect is he as an outfielder? Mm. Like, I don't, it's okay. Because he has to hit more if he's going to be an outfielder. So
you're hoping and he's Teoscar Hernandez if he's an outfielder.
Yeah. And so, like, at the end of the day, if they do keep him and he ends up as a good catcher and you have this crazy catcher platoon, like, I'm all for it. Sign me up for that. But also, if the Mets feel like that's a good way to bolster their major league roster. And there's no reason to say that you can't sign a trade for a guy who is also here next year and the year after that. Mm-hmm. You could sign and extend a someone. He could be in a Soto trade if you want to do that, or he could be in a trade for someone else, like a Corbin Burns trade or whatever, and you could extend him. And then, you know, there's plenty of things you could do with a player like that. Like, not every prospect has to play for you, but yeah, I wouldn't trade him based on the AFL, but I think he's a guy they could look for because just Alvarez was so good.
Yeah, I mean, presumably he'll be starting next season at AA Binghamton. Mm-hmm. He'll presumably be healthy, well rested, whatever. So, you know, hopefully we get a better sense of who Kevin Parada is next season. And then the pitchers, guys, we completely forgot about all the pitchers they sent. A bunch of blah. You know, Jordan Gieber, he's the only starter. He's no great shakes.
No idea who that is.
Brendan Hardy, Nolan Clenny, Trey McLaughlin, three relievers. They're kind of interesting. Like, you know, if you squint, maybe there's a little something there. Maybe not at the major league level. I don't know. But they were McLaughlin and Clenny anyway. They had decent seasons. McLaughlin, he had 9 appearances. He didn't allow a run in 8.2 innings. Nolan Clenny, he had an even 1 ERA in 9 innings. So he allowed 3 earned runs. You know, not bad. But, you know, their relievers, their ultimate upside is like middle relief in a non, in low leverage roles, most likely. So it's like, oh, okay, whatever. So, yeah, that is the AFL. Woo.
Hooray.
All right, so we are now down to the end of our Players of the Year thing that we've been doing. This week, we are reviewing middle infielders of the year, and then that's basically going to be every position, unless you guys next week want to do reliever of the year. Up to you.
No.
No? Okay.
Minor league reliever of the year. No, thank you.
That's real sicko mode. That's like, that's...
Listen, we're sickos.
That's sicko mode, and I love it.
All right, so middle infielders, obviously there's a lot of overlap. You know, outfielders, it's kind of more defined. You know, the guy with the best arm is in right field. The guy who has the most range and is just the best, you know, defender, he's the center fielder. The guy who's left is in left field. And then in the infield, you know, the guy third base has to have a strong arm and be quick to react and stuff like that. And the guy at first base just has to kind of be there and catch the ball. The difference between second base and shortstop, especially in the minor leagues when you have multiple players that are capable of, you know, playing shortstop, playing second base, whatever, it's pretty, you know, pretty slim, the difference between the two. In some cases, the guy that plays second base is a guy that's known to have a weaker arm or maybe not the best range or whatever. But in most cases, you know, the person that's playing second base is just kind of a matter of who the manager or who the organization or whatever wants to see at shortstop. And then whoever's left, you know, gets sent to second base. Case in point, the FCL roster. Colin Houck, Marco Vargas, D'Angelo Sarmiento, Boston Barrow, they all got playing time at shortstop. And Jesus Baez, Diego Mosquera, and A.J. Ewing, they only played second base. A.J. Ewing, he's a guy that the scouting reports did say the arm is a little stretched, so second base is where he is. But Baez is known as being a great defensive shortstop. Mosquera is known as being a great defensive shortstop. So the only reason why they didn't play shortstop and were playing second base is because, you know, those other guys are more important, you know, organizationally or whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah, the point is, you know, instead of looking specifically at guys that, you know, got the majority of their innings at shortstop and then looking at guys that got the majority of their innings at second base, whatever, doesn't matter. We're just going to look at two middle infielders who are the best middle infielders, period. So anyone want to throw some hats in the race here?
There is a correct answer to this.
It's
Jet Williams, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard not to say that Jet Williams was the best middle infielder that they had, period, let alone one of the.
I mean, yeah, he's probably their best prospect.
I mean.
It's... Like, I think right now I'm leaning putting him one in the system.
Yeah, it's the same.
Like, if I had to do it right now, I know we don't do it for, like, another month or so, but I think right now, like, my preliminary list has him at one. He's just so good. He's 19 and had, like, 1,000 walks and didn't strike out, and he hits for some power, not a lot of power, but the dude could play. And if he plays second base, he's going to be a crazy good second baseman, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could play. The outfield scares me a little bit. Like, I think he has the range for it, but the arm is just kind of crappy, which is why he's a second baseman, not a shortstop, but... Mm-hmm. He's good. So,
yep,
it's him.
Yeah, I mean, there's no. It's just no question. It's
Jim Williams. I would think Acuna's too. Also, maybe Vargas, but because Acuna played, I think he's a second. Did he play shortstop or second base? I feel like they moved them around.
I want to say both, but primarily second base.
That's what I thought too, but I can't remember off the top of my head, and I did not pull his name up.
Let's see. Luis Angel Acuna in 2023 with Binghamton played more shortstop than.
Oh, okay. Base. Then never mind. Put a pin in him. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, my. Yeah. I know Vargas wasn't particularly good with the Mets, I know. I would prefer him over Acuna just as players at this point, and obviously Acuna's done some things in the upper minors, but neither was particularly great with the Mets, to be totally honest.
No, neither was. Acuna was in a slump when he first showed up, if I remember correctly.
Most of Acuna's like numbers came with... Frisco, excuse me. Are they still? Yeah, they are still the Rough Riders. Yeah, he had an 830 OPS with them, as opposed to the Mets, Binghamton, where he had a 622 OPS, which is not the best.
No, he struggled when he came over, and also, like, he's moving to another state and a new team, and I'm not gonna, like,
yeah,
I get it. Like, I like Ryan Clifford wasn't particularly good in Brooklyn outside of his really hot start, but I still think of him highly as a prospect. And like me and Lucas have talked, I don't want to say shit about Acuna, but we're lower on him than other people, and he's still a top 100 prospect and still a very good prospect in the game. You know, like, it's just instead of being 50, he's 70 for me. You know, like, that's kind of where I'm at with him, which is less, but it's not. I'm not saying he's bad. He just has things that scare me, which is the plate discipline scares me. But
mm-hmm.
All right, so any other names we're going to throw out here?
I mean, it's incredible how bad the guys who started the year in the system were. You know, a lot of hype for Baez.
Nothing.
Bad. Yep. Yeah. Some late hype for Sarmiento, bad. Christopher Lara's suspended.
Yeah, he was good, and then I wonder why he was good.
Uh-huh. Ronnie Mauricio is still Ronnie Mauricio. I mean, he deserves some credit here.
Yeah, I know he got warts and all, he still had a good season. You can't...
I mean, it wasn't even that good is the thing. He was league average.
It was slightly,
AAA.
Yeah. Was slightly
yeah, so,
above
like,
average.
The thing, though, is we're not saying good in terms of the league or, like, mm-hmm. the of baseball. We're talking about the system. And in the mm-hmm. system, that is definitionally good. That's a problem, and that's why the system was not good. But he was good for the system. Like, it just is what it is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the same thing with Vientos at third base. Like, the dude mashed the AAA.
Right.
Does
right.
that make him a good prospect? No. But it makes him a good AAA player. And I think Mauricio has more major league potential than Vientos does.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that, yes.
Like, I could actually see a way for Mauricio to be a fine, like, utility player in the majors. Like, he showed me a little more in the majors than I expected, and then he was bad for a while, and then he ended with, like, an 80 WRC plus or 60, whatever it was. I don't remember. I just wrote about it in an article recently, so it's, like, it's in my head, but it was low. But it was the highest out of him and Beatty and Mauricio and Vientos. So
at the end of the day, Mauricio marginally improved his walk rates. He marginally improved his strikeout rates. You know, obviously the batting line is very dependent on, you know, the environment. So, you know, hitting 292 is like, yeah, whatever.
It's so funny that when you put the batting line out, even me, like any baseball fan, would be like, wow, good line. And then you're like, oh, when you look at it, the league, it's like, whatever.
Right. When the league average is like 300.
Like, what in the hell? What is going on in AAA? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he had a good
Jupiter. Like, I don't understand.
He had a good, you know, stolen base, you know, accumulation there, whatever. You know, it's like, we know everything. We know the good and bad of Ronnie Mauricio, but he definitely improved as compared to, you know, 2022 Ronnie Mauricio.
Also, if you take out the name, right, and the prospect cachet that he has for, because he's been around forever, and the prospect fatigue that we have talking about him, if you tell me that the Mets have a young player who could play three infield positions and kind of stand in the outfield and is a switch hitter who has power, I'm like, fine, put him on the bench. And that's literally Ronnie Mauricio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fine with him being on the Mets next year and being a major league player. It's just he's probably not a starter, and that's fine. You need backups. And he could run. He could pinch run for him, and he looked like a good base stealer. He looked like he did stuff in the major leagues that was a little interesting, and maybe they could optimize him a little more and get him into nicer matchups for him. And get him in nicer matchups for his bat, but like he was a top five in middle infielder in the organization. It was just he's not a top 100 prospect, and that's.
I would much rather have Ronnie Mauricio coming off the bench than, you know, Ruben Tejada. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's
much more upside.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something he could go. Lindor could miss a week for a sprained ankle, and you could play him at short, and you're like, all right, it's not the worst. It's similar to Guillorme, just in a different way. Like,
right, Guillorme, okay, yeah, that's a more recent, I guess, comparison.
His bat-to-ball is way better, but he just does not hit for power at all. And he's a better defender by far. But you need those guys. You need players who could be utility infielders. So he's top five for me in the middle infield for sure. It's just Jet is one. It's Jet in the field. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Any other names we want to throw out here? I have an honorable mention here.
Okay, I'm curious to see who this is.
I'm surprised that you didn't mention him, actually.
Okay, let me think now. Middle infielder. Luke Ritter?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think of Luke Ritter as a middle infielder, you're right.
He's a second baseman, right?
Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
He played
right. Yeah.
Most of his games.
At second base, right? Middle infielder in my mind, like, translates to shortstop, basically. But you're totally right. Definitely a middle infielder.
You mean
nice
the next
season.
Dan Uggla, Luke Ritter?
I hate Dan Uggla, but I love Luke Ritter. So don't ever make that comparison again, please.
If I had not been lazy today and, you know, instead of playing Baldur's Gate for 4 hours.
You were correct.
Dude, Act 3, there's just a lot. There's so much to do. A little overwhelming. Anyway, I started, like, doing some more robust deep dives into guys in preparation for our off-season list. I did Matt Rudick, and the next guy I wanted to look into just out of personal interest was Luke Ritter. And then, like I said, I spent 4 hours playing Baldur's Gate instead. So I don't. While I very much buy Matt Ruddick's production, I don't think I'm going to buy Luke Ritter's, is the bottom line.
Oh, not at all. He's.
You know what's funny? I think we're discovering that I'm looking at it way different than Lucas is, because I don't. I'm not looking at it as a prospect thing.
Right.
Like, oh. Me neither.
Who had the best season? And Luke Ritter, he hit like 7,000 home runs. Like
100%.
He went Barry Bonds mode in Double A. Like he deserves to be on the list too.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He went crazy.
No, I'm not arguing. That's exactly how I've been looking at these awards. It's just then we start talking about them.
I have no
interest in talking about their performance once we say the stats. It's like, oh wow, really great season in Double A. Anyway, like so.
I am a little sad he didn't get his shot in the major, because I think he would have got called up, but he broke his hand? Question mark? Something?
I thought he had a shoulder.
Was it shoulder? Am I conflating the Tebow broken hand and the Luke Ritter shoulder?
I think it was a shoulder.
I don't remember what happened, but,
yeah, he got hurt.
Basically, he got hurt at like the end of, like the middle of August, and then that was the end of it. He would have had definitely, I think he would have been a lock for 30 home runs if he got, I mean, he ended the season with 27, so.
I mean, I really think teams should be more aggressive giving these org guys their shot in the majors once the season is wound down, and is a little disappointed to see that, I mean, there were a couple of guys that the Mets didn't give a chance to, and then Ritter was obviously hurt and didn't get a chance to, which sucks.
His transformation is pretty crazy to me. He was never a light hit. I mean, I guess you could say that he was a light hitting infielder.
Mm-hmm. And
he went from light hitting infielder to just Jose Bautista, like, overnight. They said, there's no path for you to the major leagues except if you just do nothing but home runs. Just swing for the fences every time you're up at bat. Hit the ball hard, hit the ball in the air, and we'll see what happens. And
honestly, there's worse strategies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally fine with this.
There's worse strategies to give a guy.
They told him just do nothing but hit the ball in the air. And then the same guy went to Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos and everyone else and said, listen, just mash the ball into the ground. Great idea.
You see that? I hate that. And the guy's like, you just told Luke Ritter to do it. No.
I hate Luke Ritter.
Fuck, screw that guy. The other unfortunate reality is that in addition to, you know, costing him perhaps the clearest chance he'll ever have at a major league role, shoulder injury, not exactly great for hitter power projection.
No,
and
that's not
good. If this is a dude who, and again, I haven't watched the video extensively on Ritter, I would imagine this is a guy who is maxing out his power by, you know, yanking everything in the air, and, you know, capitalizing on a lot of wall scrapers, almost, you know, Isaac Paredes style.
Eduardo Escobar mode too.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, a lot of yanked homers down the line. And that's a viable strategy until you lose, very much like Eduardo Escobar, until you lose just a little bit of that power, and then you're...
They're out. They're fly outs.
Yep. Yep, and then they're 10, 20 feet shorter, and you have no margin for error because you're maxing out your limited raw. So, I love these guys. I love the watching org guys become something more and you know, appearing out of the woodwork basically to have little major league careers. Hopefully his shoulder is healthy enough for him to come back and get an actual shot at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's going to come back next year and hit like almost. It's basically like you said, the shoulder. If the shoulder injury didn't happen, there was this year was the most direct path for him to get to the major leagues based on his performance. Mm-hmm. Next year, who knows? You know, even shoulder injury aside, let's say that he never got that shoulder injury. Like, is he going to just go ham like he did this year? Next year,
I mean, in AAA, if he did that, if the environment's the same, he's like setting minor league home run records.
The crazy thing is, he did better in Binghamton. Than
I know
he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had 14 home runs in 43 games in Binghamton, as opposed to 13 in 64 games in Syracuse. So he likes those speedies, I guess. As opposed to whatever food Syracuse has, which I can't think of
any. Oranges. That's why the college is named.
Oh, okay.
Right? I made that. I totally made that.
Northeast, which is famously known for citrus fruits.
Yep, very
perfect. It's perfect weather in Syracuse, New York to have an orange tree.
Infamously a very tropical fruit from Florida, you know, but also upstate New York.
Also Syracuse, yes.
Oh, no, they have the salt potatoes. That's right.
Oh, right, the fucking salt potatoes. Mm-hmm. Which don't even sound bad. It's just like, this is just how you should cook a potato. Why are we making a big deal out of this? Like,
because just doing it, nothing. Just cooking that potato, put nothing on it.
You know,
put the salt on it real quick. Let's see what happens.
It's upstate New York, so I bet there's a bunch of, you know, British heritage up there. And as we know, the British conquered the world for spices, only to just never use any spices in their cuisine. So perhaps they were just boiling their potatoes and eating them as is. And someone said, hey, salt's good. And that was somehow a revelation to them.
I believe, because I read it, I believe we had like Promote Extend Trade, where we were looking at all of the weird like food things that the teams had, like the food alternate teams. I want to say that it was like Irish immigrants that went to Syracuse.
It was something like that, yeah.
The area is also just very salt rich for whatever reason. So they said, hey, here's some salt and here's some potatoes. These are two things that we like. Let's put them together. I don't know. But
truly a revolutionary combo that no one has thought of before. Combining potatoes and salt. Just who would have thunk?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the first person in Syracuse going to their neighbors being like, yo, you heard about this? I put salt on the potato. And they're like, no, you crazy.
And then they were tried as a witch.
Well, if we had any listeners in Syracuse, they hate us now.
No.
Also, any British listeners, I probably just alienated all of them.
Right. That's true, too. Good job.
Mm-hmm. So it goes.
Yeah. But yeah, looking at the list of second basemen slash shortstop in middle infielders, I guess the only other guy would be Jeremiah Jackson.
He was good after they traded for him, right?
Yeah.
He was good.
He had an 802 OPS.
He's another guy who has to max out all the power. Well, not all of that. He just like sells out for home runs and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But he is crazy. He has actual real power. Like, it's just the bat's ball is rough.
Yeah. We say, like, Ron Mauricio's bat's ball is rough. Jeremiah
he's
Jackson
like,
is, like, on a league of its own.
Which is why he's way worse of a prospect.
I mean, Ronnie Mauricio's bat's ball isn't rough. It's his swing decisions.
It's the swing decisions.
Well,
Yeah. That's true.
What happens when he makes contact with the ball.
I mean, Jeremiah Jackson, I don't actually know what his swing decisions are like, but he can't hit the ball in the zone. Ronnie Mauricio can hit the ball in the zone. He just swings at a bunch of shit he shouldn't be swinging at. Ronnie Mauricio on that, like, I don't know if people have read. If you haven't, you should go subscribe to Baseball Prospectus and read Rob Orr's most recent piece about his Seager metric, which is probably the best public-facing thing we've seen that quantifies how major league teams think about plate discipline, you know, taking the difference between in-zone aggression and out-of-zone takes. You know, like, Ronnie Mauricio would rate extremely badly on this metric.
Yeah, Jeremiah Jackson, 22 home runs, good. 48 walks in 119 games, which not terrible. And then 144 strikeouts in 119 games. Not great. Definitely not great. That is a... What's the percentage here? 33.1% strikeout rate, which is... We've seen worse. But
I mean,
not what you want.
They got him for Dominique Leone.
Do it all the time. Do that stuff all the time. If you're out of it, obviously.
Well, what are the Angels?
I mean, if he becomes the, you know, the next Travis Tyrone in the organization for the next, you know, 5 years, whatever, just mashes a shit ton of home runs, like, all right, cool, I'm here for that. And he does actually have some, well, not some, he has a lot more, I should say, defensive utility than Travis Tyrone did. So his ceiling is higher than that.
I had not thought about Travis Tyrone in, I don't know, since when.
It's been a while. But yeah, those are basically, you know, those are the top middle infielders. As mentioned, there was a bunch of other guys, you know, Colin Houck, Marco Vargas, Boston Barrow, AJ Ewing, you know.
It's Jesus, a lot of Baez. People, a lot of people who were added to the organization in the middle of the season.
Yes, like these are guys that literally played a handful of games. There's definitely potential there. And, you know, if we're doing this feature next season, God willing, you know, all these guys had 30-30 seasons, you know. So why limit ourselves? They had 40-40 seasons.
Yes, yes. Was Barrow playing middle infield? I thought he was playing third base, but I could be wrong.
He played some shortstop.
Okay.
It was, who's the other one? I feel like there's like seven guys that the Mets drafted this year that were like all in the same.
Ewing, Barrow.
Yeah.
Were all like the same type of player.
Yeah, let's see.
Well, like not same type of player, but similar. Yeah. They drafted them all around the same time.
Barrow got 21 innings at second base, 18 innings at third base. So his future is TBD in terms of, I guess, where he sticks. And another, as we've mentioned before, you know, casualties of the roster, not the roster crunch, but the elimination of you know, the Appalachian League and New York Penn League. Because if there are more teams, then these guys could have played more games. But unfortunately, you know, you cut those teams, you cut the playing time of these guys, and then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven guys on the same team that all basically play the same position. So a little bit of a roster crunch there. All right. So that is the show for the week. And we're finally done with our players of the year. I would be willing to do relievers of the year, but I guess you guys are not sickos like me.
I cannot make myself care about the Mets minor league relievers.
I mean, I feel like it's just Nate Lavender and that's the end of it.
Yeah. It's Nate Lavender one.
Yeah.
He should have been in the majors.
Yep.
Also. Probably.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahus343. Ken is at kenlavin91. And Thomas is at zmetseason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review. And, of course, we thank you for listening. A reminder, we are Patreon-based. So if you do like our podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Homer and Apple Network, you can subscribe for just $5 a month. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.